Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Monchi Williams.
Hey, what's up?
It fits. If you know Spence, it fits.
It does not fit. I'm not a Monchi.
You're a Monchi. You're definitely a Monchi.
Oh my gosh.
Speaking of other Monchis, we brought back intern Amy to return for this conversation. Of course, she did come late and without donuts again, but it's okay.
There was a new donut place, but I had to pass by it because I'm on empty, just like my heart. My car, I mean.
So, emotional issues aside, we have a great show in store for you as we're going to be talking about the recently dropped animated feature on Netflix from Sony Animations, and that is The Mitchells vs. the Machine. So stay tuned as we talk about that, but before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com, and also connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We got a bunch of episodes. We got so many episodes. We got tons of episodes. We got episodes coming at the wazoo.
Yeah.
We got a lot of episodes, is what I'm saying. Check it out on our website at filmlosophers.com. We got over 250 episodes where you can check it out. Anything from anime to action to disasters to even the epic Marvel or DC genre. check them out. We got everything for anybody and anything for anybody. Also, check us out on our streaming platforms at Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, iTunes, Audio Boom, Pandora, Spotify, anywhere you can find streaming podcasts, you can find us there. Check us out. Drop us a 5-star review. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the show. Honestly, we just love to grow and hear what you guys think. So in that case, how about we move forward with the review?
Yay!
So, like we said, we have a great show in store for you. As, like we mentioned, we have kind of pivoted from the disaster flick genre and moved into a more kind of fun, upbeat, kind of happy.
It's June.
It is June.
We have left our Mayday Maydays behind us.
And we are heading into a little bit of fun and whimsy with our review of Netflix's The Mitchells versus the Machines. This movie is very interesting and had a lot of twists and turns that we'll mention after the synopsis, but the film altogether was very unique, and all of us got a chance to see it at different times, and I don't think we've actually all talked about it. So this is going to be a very interesting conversation, but before we get into that, Spencer, give him that official synopsis goodness.
When Katie Mitchell, a creative outsider, is accepted into the film school of her dreams, her plan to meet her people at college are upended when her nature-loving dad, Rick, determines the whole family should drive Katie to school together and bond as family one last time. Katie and Rick are joined by the rest of the family, including Katie's wildly positive mom, Linda, her quirky little brother, Aaron, and the family's delightfully chubby pug, Monchi.
Yes, sir.
For the ultimate family road trip. Suddenly, the Mitchells' plans are interrupted by a tech uprising. All around the world, the electronic devices people love, from phones to appliances to an innovative new line of personal robots, decide to take over. With the help of two friendly, malfunctioning robots, the Mitchells will have to get past their problems and work together to save the world and each other.
Good job. Nice.
Yeah.
Directed by Mike Rionda in his feature film directorial debut, the film stars the vocal talents of Abby Jacobson, Danny McBride, Maya Rudolph, Eric Andre, Olivia Colman, Fred Armisen, Beck Bennett, John Legend, Chrissy Teigen, Blake Griffin, and Conan O'Brien. The film was actually originally titled The Mitchells vs. the Machines, but it got changed to Connected later during its production. But once it was actually finally purchased by Netflix, the title actually reverted back to The Mitchells vs. the Machines. This also counts as Sony Animation's first Netflix exclusive. So if Netflix is smart, they'll buy the next one too. And then last but not least, which I thought was pretty cool because of the fact that everybody here at this table, we're all fans of things like Gravity Falls and like stuff like that. Like the cryptograms in Gravity Falls, for which Michael Rianda and Jeff Rowe were also directors, there is a robot language that can be decrypted into English. Each country location has triangular symbols, which can be used to decode the robot language. For two examples, at the 23-minute mark, the screen shows a mostly empty theater with robots arriving and a screen saying, "The uprising has begun. Rejoice, brothers." When Rick Mitchell tells Eric the robot, "Hey, bud, not now, okay?" Eric replies, "Aw," displays a sad emoji and robot text saying, "All those moments will be lost in time, like tears in rain." Which is a quote from Blade Runner from 1982. So, needless to say, there's been a lot of heart and love poured into this movie.
Well, Alex Hirsch, who is the creator of Gravity Falls, was also a part of the team that worked on this movie as well as did vocal work for it.
There you go.
Ta-da!
So this is our grand pivot. Like I said, this is a full kind of 180 from what we were doing last month during the month of May. And if you're unsure of what that was, go ahead and check out those episodes. They were really fun. It was during the month of May Day. So we did a lot of doomsday speak. But now we're kind of on the up end. We're at the beginning of summer. We're ready to, you know, have fun. And what better way to have fun than, honestly, watching ridiculous animated movies? What? You don't believe me, Amy?
I don't feel that animated movies are ridiculous, but we can...
They're ridiculous. Not ridiculous in, like, watching them is ridiculous, but the stuff that happens in it is ridiculous.
It's, you know, that...
Like, fun ridiculous.
Oh, it's just so ridiculous it's fun.
That was a little creepy.
Wow, okay.
So, like we said, we're pivoting from the Doomsday Speak and everything and going right into some fun animated films that we kind of highlight. We're going to be highlighting this month. And we figured it was prudent, if you will, to talk about the most recent one that really made waves, and that was The Mitchells versus the Machines. Now, I know I had seen a trailer or two. I wasn't, to be quite honest, all that interested in watching this movie at first. I saw the trailer for when it was still called Connected, and when it was called Connected, I was like, it's probably just some kind of coming of age, like, not coming of age, but like this relationship, like coming together of the dad and the daughter and things like that. It didn't seem all that interesting in the trailers. But then when Netflix got it, I don't know if the team at Netflix decided to cut a whole new trailer, but it was massively different from the original one. And needless to say, after finally seeing the more recent one, I kind of was on board in watching it. Especially since Amy, intern Amy, was the one who had mentioned that we needed to see it, that it was a good movie, it was this, and that.
It also, you know, it just happens to be the first one right out of May Day where it is literally the robot apocalypse. I mean, if there's nothing else on your survival radar shooting up your May Day flare, moving on, it's something that is, you know, robots, apocalypse, and family.
Spencer,
and Doug the pug.
Yes, and the pug.
Who was voiced by an actual pug. By Doug the pug.
Well, you say Doug the pug like he's a well-known pug, but he's...
He's the one where you see all those, like, the ridiculous pug stuff everywhere, where it's, like, pictures of pugs, like, the same pug. That's Doug the pug. He's got a media presence I don't understand, but he does it. He's like Grumpy Cat's opposite. He's a pug and a dog.
Grumpy Cat's opposite.
Yes, I liked Grumpy Cat. He was cute.
So, Spencer, what was... You hadn't seen anything on this film. Like, had you seen the trailers?
No,
or
I saw the original Connected trailer.
Okay, so you saw the same thing I saw.
Yeah. So I thought, like, oh, this is going to be another garbage cash grab kids movie.
100%.
That's what it felt like at the time. So... Like, going into this, I was hearing people like, oh, this movie was great. I was like, oh, really? Is this another murder done by a trailer job?
Right? Seriously.
Because now that I know trailers aren't as trustworthy as I thought, Disney, you know, I'm willing to give movies a try, even if I think the trailer is bad for them, if other people say that there might be something there.
And I think that's been one of those kind of hard... hard pills to swallow for myself. Ever since you started mentioning that, it's like somebody telling you, like, oh, you see the number 13 everywhere. No, you don't. And then you go out and like, oh my God, there's 13th Street. Oh my God, I live down the street from 13 Warriors. I don't know. Something ridiculous. I don't know. But you start noticing the pattern and you're like, oh my God. You started talking about it, and now every trailer I watch, I no longer just sit back and enjoy. I have to scrutinize with like insane observation eyes to see, all right, are they being truthful about this?
Yeah.
In the
and then welcome. And then the big red flag if it's a Disney film because of you.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, we can all thank Marvel for all of that, but...
all they had to do was show the correct number of stones in that dang gauntlet.
I remember that.
I can imagine now Black Widow is literally just everything that you've seen in the trailers the first 15 minutes. After that, it's just everybody mourning her death or something.
I mean, if they get people to pay $30 for it at the jump, there you go.
Oh, I'd be so mad. Premiere. Oh, no.
But that's why I'm not doing it. this one's a hard no.
We got to do an episode on the next level of...
You mean pay to play?
Well, pay to watch. Pay-per-view, if you will. The new age of pay-per-view.
No, it's not even pay-per-view because pay-per-view, you just pay per view. This is like, well, you need to subscribe to us. Then we'll let you pay us money.
It's a pay to play. It feels like it's a pay to play to get the rest of the content.
Yeah, I mean, Spence got a point. I mean, it's like pay on top of pay on top of pay. It's ridiculous. Mm. Coming into this film, what were some of your biggest expectations, Spence?
Mostly it was me trying not to judge the movie on the original trailer when it was connected. I didn't see, I don't think I rewatched any of the trailers when it was rebranded as The Mitchells vs. The Machines.
Uh-huh.
I was just like, okay, I guess, all right. So like, I was like, well, if I'm going to watch this movie, I might as well watch it with my mom. So
there you go. Yeah.
So she could suffer too if she hated it.
There you go. The man after my own heart. I know kind of where you're going to go with expectations. I'm going to let you go for last because I want you to kind of have that tail end. Oh, just.
I don't know what's going on. I'm just here for the ride.
Okay. my biggest expectation for the film was, honestly, after knowing what they're capable of with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, but also seeing what their laziness will also create with the Emoji Movie.
Ooh.
I don't think I'm comfortable yet prior to watching this. I don't think I've gotten any more comfortable with any of their films fully, this is going to sound really weird, but fully satisfying that movie itch with them. Because with, oh my God, the Emoji Movie was just god awful.
I kind of forgot it existed.
I've never seen it, and I'm very glad I haven't. But I am in contention for, they made Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. They did not mean to make Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, too. Or Hotel Transylvania, blah, 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 blah,
all blah. All the Hotel Transylvania.
Okay, so it sounds like we're dealing with a pretty inconsistent studio. They can make some really absolutely great stuff and some real garbage fires.
And the sad thing is, they're also the ones who did Hair Love. So they.
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Oh,
but they're also the same ones who did the Smurfs.
Yeah. All of the Smurfs.
Gosh! Studio,
you know, but then they also did something like Surf's Up, which is your favorite movie.
This is one of my favorite movies.
But then they also did The Star, which is the movie about the birth of Jesus, and we're talking animals.
Is that Whoopi Goldberg as another animal?
I don't know. I didn't watch it.
I don't know. That's why.
No, I'm telling you, I didn't watch it. And then, I mean, they came out with Open Season, the first one,
ew,
as well as all the rest of them. The first one was good. Did you ever see the first one?
Boog.
But then they also came up with Surf's Up 2 Wave Mania.
I've never seen
with
it.
With John Cena as
never what? Seen it.
That almost sounds like a made up movie.
It sounds like the crossover, the Scooby Doo crossovers, right?
It's got John Heater. It's got John Heater as Chicken Joe.
It's always
John Cena is in it as JC. Paige, who is another, she's a diva, she's in it. The Undertaker has a voice acting role in it.
So it's basically
Vince McMahon has a voice acting role in this thing.
It's a Scooby-Doo crossover, but with penguins.
Triple H has a place in this. Michael Cole, the actual announcer for WWE, is in this movie.
So they got a whole bunch of people from WWE. So, oh, yeah, Scooby-Doo. I forgot there was
multiple WWE.
Yep.
So ultimately, Sony Animation has not given me any sense of stability in terms of trusting their movies. Plain and simple.
It's a real dice roll, it sounds
like. It is. And that's kind of what I was coming into this with, was like, okay, there it looks somewhat like the animation style from Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, but then it could have a really garbage storyline. And if it has a really garbage storyline, it doesn't matter how good you look. You can dress a turd up however you want. It'll still be a turd.
Yep.
So that was my biggest expectation coming into the movie. I didn't want it to just royally suck. You know, I actually wanted to have better expectations for Sony Animation. What about you, Amy? What were some of your biggest expectations?
Well, I had the blessed opportunity to not see the original connected trailer.
Mm. Really?
Yep.
I thought you had seen it.
Nope. So when it had popped up as Mitchells versus the Machine, first off, I was like, you branded very well, my friends. This is, I'm like, it's a versus. And then watching it, the trailer, I was like, oh, it's, you know, a dad-daughter family road trip with the apocalypse and robots and there's a fat dog. So my first impression, well, my expectation, sorry, right, not impression, brain.
Ooh. Expectations.
My expectations.
Expectations.
I was really hoping it wouldn't suck, since considering that Sony has a track record of hit and miss depending upon who's leading the pack, or leading the team at the time. And then noticing that Alex Hirsch, which of course he is one of the, well, I can say the mastermind behind Gravity Falls,
yeah,
as well as his soiree into...
Well, I mean, hold on, because you keep... One of the things you keep mentioning, Alex Hirsch was just a consultant. He didn't lead anything. He was just a consultant for the film.
For Gravity Falls?
For the Mitchells versus the Machines.
He was a voice, Dirk. He has credits.
I know, but you keep putting a lot of weight in Alex Hirsch, and it's well. There's not really a lot.
The thing is that sometimes consultants, even if they're consulting, or they're consulting and they're consultants. Wow, brain. Sometimes there's people that get attached to projects that make me go, I want to give this movie a chance because of their connection to it, and I want to see how they impacted it. Is there something I like? Are things hitting differently? And so between that and then Olivia Colman, who, and I'm just saying she's the voice of the robot Pal, but if you are a Doctor Who fan, Olivia Colman is Prisoner Zero. So it's like, yeah. she's done a lot of work with the BBC, as well as being in an indie movie called The Favourite. And she also is, I believe she's Queen Victoria in The Crown on Netflix, and she's won awards for it. So I'm like, ooh, person that scares me, but that's really cool. Let's do this. So expectation was, please don't suck. Let's go. I'm in it.
So... Yeah, it's an interesting... I don't know if I agree fully on your perspective, but...
You never do. It's
because,
okay.
Because just wanting to see something... to see how good it is just because somebody's attached to it, that would...
That's what people
validate
do with
any reason why anybody would watch any more Ben Kingsley movies. Like, he's not good
you
anymore.
You do the same thing with John Hamm.
When was the last John Hamm movie?
Well, the last thing I remember, John Hamm, not movie. I was thinking of Good Omens.
Oh. I didn't watch it for John Hamm.
I don't know if you did or not. I don't trust that. I don't know your watch schedule. I know David Tennant, Michael Sheen.
Remind me, did we give the intern the dictionary that she needed to study?
Nope.
Okay.
I never got it.
I don't know. That's an interesting perspective to have. Like, and I kind of want to talk, like, kind of unwrap this a little bit more, to watch something, because it's an interesting concept. I don't think, not to my knowledge, and I'm actually thinking about, I don't think I've ever really done that.
Rocky.
To where, no.
Yes.
I didn't know Sylvester Stallone prior to that. That was my first Sylvester Stallone movie I'd ever seen.
And how many Sylvester Stallone movies have you seen?
Probably several.
So if he attached himself to something, like, did you see The Expendables or whatever it was?
I saw the first one, and that was it.
It was in there, right?
No, I didn't watch it because of him.
You sure?
Yeah.
I don't believe
I'm not as easily gullible as others when it comes to... And I don't mean to say that...
I am an optimist. I'm not that gullible.
Okay. Okay, Spencer.
Spencer, help.
What?
No. No,
There's an intern fight.
No.
I need protection.
Yeah. Calm down over there. No, honestly, like, in terms of discussion, because I don't really see that... Maybe I need better understanding of it. What are your thoughts on watching something just because somebody's attached to it?
Oh, I've done that before. Because... I don't remember who, though.
What?
Stephen Moffat. We both did it.
No.
I did it for Stephen Moffat.
I didn't do it for Stephen Moffat.
And then I went, nope, that's a bad choice.
Yeah.
I've had onesies and twosies like that.
I think the biggest thing for me, the biggest hiccup I have on it, is how small and little of a role he had in the overall film and how much you're putting the weight of the viewing experience on that minutia of a portion of the film.
No. I can enjoy the film, and it was an added delight that, hey, he had worked on it.
Yeah. You know what? Hey, you know what? If you enjoyed the film as a whole without it being like, I saw this because of Alex Hirsch, then, because that's what it sounded like.
No.
Well, talking about, in terms of speaking about how the film actually impressed upon us, what were your first impressions, Amy?
This was varying animation in all of its crazy glory. There were so many different textures and stylization, not just to the animation, but as well to the CGI that was used. It was funky, fun, super colorful. The color palette was crazy and cool, literally in that order. And I didn't think I would have emotions for Eric and DeborahBot 5000.
What about you, Spence?
Yeah, they definitely made a mistake with that first trailer, because this movie came across as a lot, like, very boring in that first trailer. This was a super creative movie, and I was actually really impressed that it was just so much better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to agree. I think one of the best things that came out of this movie is the fact that it did not look like anything of the first trailer. That first trailer really kind of almost put the nail in the coffin for me not to see it. If it wasn't for actually seeing the follow-up trailers for it on Netflix, I probably would have not have watched it at all, because of the fact that I don't want to... It's one of those things where I don't want to easily just be drawn into another Sony movie just because the last one did really, really well. I mean, for God's sakes, look at the new Venom movie. Like, that movie...
I haven't watched this trailer yet.
Please, you are so...
Please don't.
We're going to have to see this after this movie.
Please, no.
After,
don't. I just, don't. He needs joy.
No, there's no. No, you don't understand. There's
I
a
do
lot
understand.
This man needs to pay for making me watch through that amazing bulk. So if I can show him bit by bit...
I refuse to be paying for that for the rest of my life,
you
Eddie.
Will be. You will be. That movie has put such a mar in my viewing. I feel like my right eye has gotten slower because of watching that movie.
I guess he needs to go to the optometrist after this.
Ain't no optometry going to fix that, sweetheart. Nope. That's
lots
all,
of muscle. Muscle. Work that muscle.
That is all homegrown strain from not wanting to look at what's on the screen.
I guess we've established the Monchi at the table then. With
Now who's Monchi?
You.
You.
Oh, it's you.
You were saying your one eye is slower. He couldn't even focus on one thing. His eyes went two different directions.
You know, hey, there you go. But no, so I was glad for the fact that the movie, once the film finished, that it actually had good weight to it in terms of emotional, in terms of intellectual weight to it. There was much more meat to it than there was that I really was lacking in the first trailer. Mm-hmm. And all for good reason, because as much as it starts out as just this simple, you know, familial mending kind of experience, it really blossoms into something completely else while still maintaining its heart at the core of it. So diving into this, and just to let everybody know, we are going to be talking about spoilers. We have to. This movie just has way too many things going on in it to not talk about some of the bigger things about it. So you're warned. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler
Man,
alert.
That pizza's really talking to me. One of the things I really want to talk about with Sony and their work in this film is the CGI. All the animation, all the graphics, everything in it, because there were points of it where there was actual CG used in the overall filming of this movie. But what I want to ask you guys is, with this being a Netflix film, do you think the quality was any lesser than Into the Spider-Verse, or do you think it was on the same level?
Well, didn't they only just buy the distribution rights for everywhere but China from Sony?
That's what I thought.
Yeah. True.
So, like, they didn't really have any say in, like, you should do that. Well, I'm sure with the trailer, they were like, get rid of this connected nonsense.
yeah. But they're like, you're selling too much. This isn't going to work. Get out. Get out now.
Probably besides, like, doing a recut trailer and making sure it was back to the original title, I don't think they had too much to say of, like, the main movie itself. But I thought the quality was pretty good going in, like, visually. Stunning. I love how it looks. I also liked how it wasn't exactly Into the Spider-Verse again.
Yeah.
Like, it was its own thing. And I was like mildly wondering that, like, when I was watching it, it's like, can they do something different? And they can. And I was like, that's great.
And I think that was one of the biggest things we all asked ourselves after Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. You know, now that this came out as a huge success, is this going to be kind of the cookie cutter for every Sony animation film after the fact? And I have to agree. I'll expound upon it, but I want to give Amy a chance as well. What did you think in terms of the animation style for the film, and how closely or how far away does it come to Into the Spider-Verse?
Well, because they're two separate animation styles, we kind of need to address that, in that Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is visually stunning. You can take any moment in that and it is literally, you can print it, hang it on a wall. It's breathtaking. Now, on the flip side, when it comes to Mitchell's versus the Machine, in and of itself, how it's designed, there are moments you can catch that and do the same thing, but the animation styles are not the same. The storytelling, though, is very similar in the quality and care that was taken with both of those. And so when it comes to putting one up against the other to do essentially a versus, this Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse will always win in the visual department, but it doesn't mean Mitchell's versus the Machine is any less of a great contender or a great creative, multifaceted use of multiple animation styles and CGI as a movie, so...
I have to agree. I think one of the biggest things to take away from this film is the fact that Sony can actually build from what they've created and not so much keep to what kind of was that. Not so much one-hit wonder, because they're making a sequel. So I don't want to say it like that. But I do believe that their efforts in making Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse so unique and then building on that in something pretty much almost completely different, where the pastel kind of look and the almost like on paper kind of art style of it slightly, and then having it transition into, you know, something a little bit more obscure to CG with a lot of the technical techie parts of, like, some of the scenes with the robots and stuff like that,
or the sock puppets
having, like, actual sock puppets. They looked real. I don't know if they actually took actual sock puppets or they actually used CG to create them, but all of it was great, and the usage of these mediums, juggling them in the way they did for this film, really created, not just in my opinion, something that stands apart from Into the Spider-Verse, but also gives people the opportunity to see that not all animated films have to just be completely animated, and it can be fun, and it can speak to a generation. I mean, I understood probably about 99% of everything that she was into, but, like, some of the things, and I'm pretty sure they were made to be a little bit more ridiculous or bombastic for the sake of being unique and different. Like, a lot of it spoke to the, you know, the TikTok generation nowadays, or the YouTube generation, or, you know, a lot of the creators and content makers and and people who are out there expressing their digital art in some form or fashion. This spoke to that generation, which is our generation pretty much. I mean, we're a bunch of early 30-year-olds, you know, wanting, you know, podcasting right now. And that's our digital art. So I kind of find it unique and funny about how it speaks towards that in a very unique light. In terms of the actual family itself, we get actually a pretty good range of people. I never would have guessed to pair somebody like Danny McBride with Maya Rudolph. Like,
can we also address that Maya Rudolph again is playing a Linda? She was Linda in the Willoughbys nanny.
Yeah.
And she's Linda in this. And no, I totally agree. I would have never figured out putting them together and actually having their performances complement each other in such a nicely organic way, because I don't,
It's so weird sounding. Right? I was like, when I was looking at the cast list, I was like, oh yeah. Like, because I know Danny McBride, but like for some reason it didn't really click till I saw his face next to my face.
It really does, like no offense to Danny McBride, but
you're cool, man, but we don't expect this, so kudos.
Yeah. I'm not the biggest fan of the man. I haven't really seen much of his that I can actually say I've fully enjoyed. But the fact remains is that he is a hilarious father role in this movie. And to be quite honest, he is probably the dynamic between him, well, his acting, and then the little boy's acting, Aaron, are probably the two standouts for me in this movie. Which the little boy, Aaron, who's played by, I can find it right now.
He's the one that doesn't show up immediately when you try to find him.
Aaron is played by the actual director.
Ooh.
So the director actually voices him. But I think those two are really stand out. Like Danny McBride, he's a great dad. He's one of those types of people that's like, oh, he's the stickler dad, you know, always wanting to fix things and always wanting to carry screwdrivers around, blah, blah, blah. And then Aaron is this young, neurotic little boy who is absolutely just over the moon about dinosaurs.
Do you want to talk to me about dinosaurs? No? Okay, thank you.
Like, the very first introduction you get with him is when he's calling people out of the phone book alphabetically to ask if they want to talk to him about dinosaurs. And it's interesting kind of how that social anxiety that he gets in juxtaposition to when he's on the phone just asking willy-nilly. I like recognizing those two different kind of variations of Aaron. And it really does give you a good idea as to where he is socially and where he ends up at the end of the film. I think it's really cool. Not to mention he's got some of the best lines in the film. Like, hands down.
Like what?
Like, oh yeah, you know, I really turned a corner around these guys. I like them or something. Like when he's talking about the robots, when he's talking about how he's got pterodactyl eyes, and not to mention he's the raptor bash that him and his sister do.
Yeah, that's like, cute.
Or every time he runs into the girl from next door,
Abby Posey, played like, by
I hate dinosaurs. I'm gonna leave. I hate you. Don't ever talk to me again. And then he runs off.
Well, and the best part is, so Abby Posey, the Posey family, which is the neighbors for the Mitchells, are Chrissy Teigen
and John Legend,
and then their adopted daughter is, I believe her name is Charlene Yee, and her name's, but she is Chloe from We Bare Bears. She's Ruby from Steven Universe. She was somebody's girlfriend in Knocked Up with Seth Rogen, which was really weird.
Oh. Who are we talking about here?
Charlene Yee?
Because she looks like...
She's a little girl. Who are you talking about?
No, she an adult. It's about to go down. Welcome to the Google. Welcome to the Google.
Oh, okay, I mean, she still looks young.
She looks,
but okay.
Yeah, she looks young.
Oh, she is not as
she's not as little as you think.
She's all as old as we are. Cool.
But the fun thing is vocally. But vocally, she has some of the most interesting vocals. And listening to her for so long as I have, when she showed up and she offers Aaron the little dinosaur with the squiggly arms, the pencil topper,
the ones that Chuck E. Cheese and all them used to have,
And with the crazy teeth where they could, you can make them bite, I was just like, yes. And then when he just loses it, runs out, ugh, so good.
Oh, there you go.
Thank you, Charlene.
Had you known of her prior to this?
as Ruby and Chloe. Yeah.
You knew the characters, but I mean, have you known of her as an actress?
Yeah. Sadly, from Knocked Up.
Oh, okay. I only saw that movie like maybe once or twice. I didn't really... It's an acquired taste.
Exactly.
But
this movie isn't an acquired taste. This is a fun taste. I mean, there's giant Furbies in it. Well, there's a singular giant Furby. I love that everybody's like distracted. We're reading about the acting.
And the unique thing is, I would have never guessed that she's the actual adopted daughter in the movie or for real life?
In the movie.
Okay.
Not in real life.
That's why I was like, I was like,
Tegan adopted a 35-year-old.
That's why I was like, what are you? I don't.
No. She's Abby Posey, so she's the Posey's daughter.
Okay. Got it.
But yeah, she was a wonderful bright spot. We don't get to see enough of her, which is fun and good. It's just a little tidbit. But then also the robots, Eric and Deborah Bot 5000, which is Ben. Is it? It's Beck Bennett,
and then Fred Armisen
from Saturday Night Live is the first thing that I thought of, but then Fred, I also think of Portlandia. Anyway, I'm like Portlandia like, first, but I have to bring up that he was on SNL because that's how he connects to Beck. Their interaction has robots and connecting with their feelings, and now they are mama's boys, but mama's boys robots is so fun. Like, it's such a great turn. You expect it, but you don't expect it all at the same time. And so I was just like, thank you for being so ridiculous and so brilliant in juxtaposition to this family.
They helped a lot of the they broke up a lot of the like the odd tension in the family, where like when things were just really kind of at odds, they would say something or whatever. One of them would draw a tear on his helmet and be like, I am making water, or what does it say? I make eye water
like you. Or that they had to walk downstairs in their first like introduction. They have to walk downstairs to get the other humans that can't be controlled by humans, and they come up and they just have those really poorly drawn faces that they never get rid of.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes. This is paint. This is me trying to draw a face in paint when I first learned how to move a mouse.
What about you, Spence? Anybody else that stood out to you?
No, I'm in on Team Aaron all the way, because like that boy was funny the whole movie. Like anytime he's on the screen, just like made me laugh. Really,
yeah. He was good. I really liked his dynamic in the film. I liked his relationship with, not just with him and his sister, but the dynamic between him and his mom, always both working to try to make amends of these two. I thought that was hilarious that he was like, did mom tell you to say that to me? No. Yeah. Or the freak out he has when they pull up into that dinosaur world. He's like, these are not scientifically accurate. I need to speak to the manager. But that's all to say, as great as the cast was, the story really held up. To be frank, I honestly thought that if, in the case of what's been going on here, outliers aside, with like Spider-Man and the Spider-Verse being a unique situation with collaboration with Marvel and so forth, I would have thought that one of the things would have been sacrificed for the other. Like the story would have been less because the action and everything else that was happening in the film was more. But the fact is, we had 110% of both of them. Mm-hmm. And the story was absolutely wonderful and beautiful. It didn't overpour a lot of over emotional scenes. It kept everything organic and it seemed authentic, honestly. Like, being a former preschool teacher, I can agree with Linda. Yeah, this is a regular day. Like, things like this, you got poop on the ceilings and vomit on the walls over here, and somebody's, you know, over here stuffing, you know, Legos in somebody's nose. Like, that's a Monday morning. So things like that happen. But I really liked how this story kind of just created an organic feel. It didn't feel like everything was, in terms of the family, mm-hmm. the story of the family, nothing of it seemed out of the realm of possibility in terms of how we respond to things, how we act about certain things, how we even treat others to get what we want. And then coming to terms with the fact that you recognize other people have sacrificed even without you knowing, and you shouldn't have to know it to be grateful for it, but knowing it, it helps kind of recognize that ultimate sacrifice, especially when it comes to parents.
Yeah. And as the parent at the table, yes, the intern is parent. I can definitely connect on both levels with the sacrifice spoiler of the cabin and set, like having created something and then having to let it go because you're making a choice that the little person in the back seat is
worth. Did you baby Moses, your firstborn? What are you doing over here? You said you're creating something and then letting it go.
Oh my God.
I had a budding career as an aspiring nothing.
As an inspiring female.
Yes. There you go. I was aspiring to just be normal. But making decisions and sacrifices for people, and you know that they probably won't remember and they won't realize it till later, and you pour in and do things for your offspring that you didn't think you would do, and then you start realizing that parents that actually care about their kids,
yep,
that are truly invested in their kids, do it all the time without a second thought. And then you have brilliant Linda, who's just like, hey, let's lessen the tension, let's try again. read from my note cards, trying to keep the peace. The family dynamic was super organic. Even the dog, especially Aaron asking for Monchi to be in a tuxedo
and a hat,
like a little gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And that was the emphasis. We were going to a fancy buffet for the tiny cheesecakes, and Monchi could be in a tuxedo with a bow tie, like a little gentleman. They embraced their weird on so many levels.
Yeah.
And it felt so wonderful to acknowledge it, not only to acknowledge it, but to see it function in its unfunctionality. And it was very human, which is so cool for, like, in juxtaposition to
the robot uprising and everything.
Well, and John Legend and Chrissy Teigen's perfect Instagram family next door. Like,
that was interesting.
And the inspirational speech from Katie, main protagonist, when they're sitting there and he goes, she's trying to encourage her dad to, like, we can't sit by and do nothing. She's need to go out there, we need to do this. But she says something along the lines of, you know, did we quit when we were on that hike and we got halfway there and it said the trail was closed? No, we kept going forward. Sure, we got lost and we had to burn our clothes. And then it was great watching the posies' faces when we were running naked through the back of their yard. And then they show you, they cut to that sequence and you're just like, yep, that's great.
Yep. What do you think, Spence? What did you think about the storytelling overall?
Overall, I thought it was pretty good. Just the way that a lot of the movie gelled together. There wasn't, like, any parts where I was, like, bored or just, like, not paying attention. Like,
was this any electronics?
What?
Did you use any electronics while you watched this?
I had to use my Chromebook because of reasons of how my mom's house worked.
It was a one-device movie.
It was a one-device movie.
Control device.
If it was the control device, that makes sense.
There you go.
Keep going,
sir. I don't like how we have, like, a rig of, like, how many screens did Spencer have?
Well, if you had it where you needed to use it to actually use the other device for the television, I don't count it. Like, that's when I lose my remote.
It's half a screen still.
But that's, like, one of the smallest ones we can do. His screen. Oh, my goodness.
It is true. No, but, like, just story-wise, I actually really liked a lot of, like, just how they handled, like, the dad and the daughter and them being so different. I thought, like, a lot of this was just, like, making me think, how much did my parents do for me that I don't even realize thing, you know? And I think any movie that can get me, like, to reflect on my own life is doing something right, you know?
True.
So, like, watching this movie, I was just, like, how did they put that first trailer out? I keep going back to it. It was just so garbage. Because, like, this movie is so much better than that made you see. First, yes, yeah. It's still very silly, but it's totally worth it. So I thought they did a good job.
I agree. It's same here. It is so strange why they thought that first trailer was going to be a success. Yeah. They put everything in that first trailer. They gambled everything on that first trailer on the scenes where the dog is licking the dad's mouth. That was the highlight of the tail end of that trailer.
It was her part of her project where she is like getting my dad to kiss the dog across the 50 states. Like, that's what they put it on as the kicker.
Hey, if it works,
this is gonna rope people in.
Exactly. Works great as a part in the movie, but as the trailer alone, I can't see it. I would just be like, what?
It was about two thirds of the trailer.
Yeah.
Oh, so, man.
And then there was something about robots at the end of the trailer.
Maybe. I don't even remember that. Like, I don't remember any conversations about robots. That's how bad that trailer was.
I mean, the Furbies were alarming and like...
Let's talk about those Furbies for a quick second.
Yeah, I can't believe they brought those back for this movie. But
I kind of love that.
They were amazing.
So, for a portion of this movie, they go to a mall because it's part of the storyline. In this mall, there's a toy store, and it has Furbies in it. And I was like, what kind of modern toy store has Furbies from the 90s in it? That doesn't make any sense. And then it just zooms in, and you see this logo that says PAL inside. There's new updated versions that are internet connected, which is insane because the original versions already knew too much about you. So now they're being attacked by these crazy Furbies.
Yep.
And then when this is all happening, they're like, summon the elder in Furbish, whatever it was called.
I think it was Furbish.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Like, my sister owned one of these dang things. So there was always chattering in the house for a couple of years till the batteries ran out on that dang thing.
See, and they had, the only reason they summoned the elder, by the way, the elder is a massive, we don't know how big, like, we can't count by Furby's
I think it
household.
Was like a 60-foot tall one.
It's like the world's largest Furby.
It's like, who made this?
But the only reason they summoned the elder Furby was because one of the other Furbies literally got taken down by a bow and arrow. Like, just legit.
I will avenge my small, what is it, my children or something, or my friend, my small friends?
No, my children. It was something like my children.
I love it. Yeah, and all in Furbish, mind you. Mm-hmm. Highly disturbed, like, and in very bass level sounding Furbish for that big
but
old
it
monstrosity.
It sounds like the toy. If you remember that 90s toy, it sounds just like that.
Something like that.
Did you have one?
No, I okay. wasn't. So I wasn't cool enough. I had Tamagotchi. Holler.
I wasn't cool enough for Furby.
I wasn't cool enough for a Furby, but I did sleep over at somebody's house who had one, and it legitimately, in the middle of the night, I was, and I'm like, what? And then I woke up my friend, and I'm like, you need to turn it around. He needs to face the wall.
Which is so insane. The thing had a dang light sensor in it. You feel like it would just turn off if it's super dark.
No,
that's how we knew everything was haunted. Like, it's just, that's your ghost detector. You just put the Furby in the room.
Fun fact, Furbies were also banned in the Pentagon because apparently they listened to people and would occasionally repeat back what they said.
Yep.
That's amazing, Spencer.
That's how they went.
That's how we infiltrate the Pentagon. Furby everywhere. You just put one in your pocket or in your briefcase.
Ma'am, I'm going to need you to relinquish that Furby.
Did you see that? You go through the metal detector. Ma'am, what is this? It's my kid's Furby. Uh-huh. I see what you're trying to do.
Spencer trying to be the next John Snowden with Furby. That's why we can't have anything nice.
And that sequence is so great because they've gotten to the mall. They figured out, thanks to Eric and Deborah Bot 5000, that they can stop the machine uprising if they go to the PAL store. Hello, Apple. I mean, sorry, fruits. They go to the fruit stand. Wink.
What?
So they're supposed to upload a kill code. But everything in the mall that has a PAL's chip suddenly decides to attack them. Furbies are the last line. We get ice makers, blenders, microwaves, multiple drones, a couple of fridges. It's like, oh my gosh, one of them was like something, freeze, carnage. And it just kept yelling it while it was moving forward slowly. And I'm just like, wow, Dickray. Even the smart racket, the dad picks up a racket and it starts beating himself over the head.
And he screams, why does this even have a chip inside? I've been doing that for years. There's so many things that are smart for no good reason.
Yep.
That's the end of that thought.
I was going to say that. Just,
also, this actually, no, going back to technology, this movie does have actually quite a bit to say about technology and 100%. Its effects on society, which I was not expecting in this movie, even though it's about humans versus robots.
There's really, and I think the way they did it had a little bit more tact and a little bit more like subtle nuance to it than what looked like in that original trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole idea of like, oh, connected, because you're always connected to your devices, so you should be connected to your family now. Like, that's the vibe I got, you know, after that trailer, and then seeing the title, I'm like, connected. This looks like a T-Mobile commercial.
Connected, brought to you by T-Mobile.
Exactly.
There you go.
And in this one, there was a lot of like subtle nods towards like, okay, all right, like you were saying, like, okay, yeah, there is a smart chip in just about everything. Or, oh, you know, okay, I get it. You know, my fridge doesn't need to be smarter than my computer. Or, you know, the, okay, I get it. Like,
do I need a webcam in my fridge to tell me that I'm out of milk?
Yeah, no joke. Or okay, yeah, the events that happen every year about an announcement or an event.
Everybody loads in, or the constant updates that are suddenly like, oh, it's just my phone, fine, whatever, it's updating. I'm not going to pay attention while it updates or what it's doing.
Yeah. It did say a lot, oddly enough, and I think it did it more tastefully than I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to give them kudos for that. It's not going to stop me from using my devices, but still. In terms of like any highlights or issues with the film, were there any issues you guys had? I'll kind of call out the first one for me. I've seen John Legend in movies. John Legend can act from time to time. He's still very wooden, but from time to time, he can maybe do a good job here or there. Unfortunately, his wife is not an actress. And her scenes in the movie just didn't kind of like land as well as I wanted them to for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get it, the whole idea of like using well-known celebrity couples as like the it family in the neighborhood.
It makes sense from a paper standpoint.
Yeah, but if they kind of have to land their lines a little better. For me, I didn't feel like, I felt like the only believable person in that family was Abby.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'd agree with that 100%.
So, but I think that was my only, honestly, my only hiccup for this entire movie. Everything else from the scene, you know, scene sequences to, you know, the cinematography to the music to the usage of different CG and animation styles, to everything else was like on point. Bravo. Like, seriously, but that was my only gripe. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I didn't really have a problem with much in this movie to really think about it, like, because like not much really bothered me. Like, yeah, Chrissy Teigen, like, she, I don't know, the way she did some of her lines made me feel like, is this character supposed to be more less aware than she's actually is? Like, I couldn't really fully get what she was doing, but it wasn't that much of a bother once I was like, oh no, she's this. But yeah, other than that, I didn't really have any issues in this movie, which I find surprising.
What about you, Ames?
I don't have any issues because really the John Legend, Chrissy Teigen type of moment is so fleeting that it doesn't really impact. Like, you have to nitpick super hard to find something in this. And it thanks. Was like, what?
Like, thanks.
No, I mean, that's, if you're looking with a critical eye, if you're going to get hyper specific because you have to, if you're like, I have to find something that's wrong with this movie, yeah. It's a small one, but it gets not even glossed over. It can be overlooked because they are not a larger part of the entire story. Like, the guy, Mark, whatever his name is, that's supposed to be the creator of PAL.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, yeah, woo-woo, whatever. And I'm like, okay, cool. You're just moving the story along. Thanks, buddy. Like,
talking about Eric Andre?
Yeah. Then it wasn't bad acting. It wasn't unnecessary because he's part of building why the machines decide to up, why specifically a machine decides to uprise all machines. But yeah, I didn't have any gripes, which usually I'm like, okay, so we need to talk about this. Like, it's delightful.
It is. It is. It really is. So wrapping this whole thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table. We'll go ahead and start with Spencer. And did the film pass or fail? And how many monocles?
This movie passes for me. Really, it's just another lesson in make sure you cut your trailers correctly. I thought this was probably going to be a dumpster fire of the movie. I was really wrong about that. I really liked this movie and had a great time watching it. And so did my mom. I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 monocles. I thought it was a really well done movie.
Nice. Amy?
This movie definitely passes for me. Of course, I kind of forced everybody to do it because it caps off a wonderful May Day and into June type of scenario. It is fun. It is heartfelt. You will come away with so many one-liners or moments that will get stuck in your head, i.e. looking at that Brontosaurus face will just get you at the weirdness, or having a phone record that is sentient, it's sentient, decide to ask to be placed on a table so it can angrily flop about.
And that coming from a proper British actress, to be honest, like everything from The Favourite to obviously like Doctor Who, to all these other different proper roles, The Crown,
the original Office. Yeah, she's Broad Street or Broad Church, not Broad Street.
Broad Church.
She's been doing it for a while, but she is so wonderful as the Siri of the of the entire series. I'm thinking that. So for monocles, I definitely give it a 4 out of 5. If you've got the time to sit down and enjoy some cray-cray animation, get to it.
Yeah. The film passes for me. It definitely touches on a lot of aspects of myself personally in terms of like a lot of her movie posters. A lot of the main protagonists I kind of saw myself in with.
You saw her shining socks?
Oh, of course I saw her shining socks. I saw her a lot of her posters on the wall. I saw some of her buttons that she had. Some of the things that she was doing in homage with some of her videos. Like, if you freeze the picture of like all her different short films, when she does that submission, it looks like a bunch of other classic films like Dial M for Murder and The Third Man and things like that. And it just seemed like it's something that I could see myself. I saw myself in a little bit. So I definitely loved it. I definitely thought it was a great film. It passes for me. I'm going to give it 4.5 monocles out of 5. It's a great film. It could easily be a 5. Who knows? But I'm giving it 4.5. Just because, like I said, with Sony, I want this to be a constant. I want this thing to be, you know, an ongoing, like, progression of movies that always act like this. And by this, I mean better. Better than the last one. Or at least uniquely better in its own right. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Film Philosophers. Remember, you can check us out on all of our streaming platforms at Pandora, Spotify, Audio Boom, Google Play, Libsyn, iTunes, Everywhere FM, blah, blah, blah. I forgot what the other one. What was that one? Anchor FM. I don't know. You said one time that you found. I forget.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Streaming platforms.
On Audible?
Pocket Cast.
That's what it was.
I'll check Audible.
You can also check us out on socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. We'd love to hear from you there. Also check out our website at filmlosophers.com. I had an energy drink today. Filmlosophers.com. There you can check out all of our episodes as well as check out other great podcasts that are available here in the Sacramento area. We had a great episode today, and I also want to thank intern Amy for being a part of it. Thank you again for joining it.
And I didn't bring donuts, and I gotta thank you. Yay.
Hey, don't ruin the moment, okay? It's just
moment ruin.
This is a great movie, and I really do hope that the momentum continues and we get to see awesome films, because we've seen it in the niche markets with like Steven Universe and Gravity Falls, even in what is that show that your oldest daughter watches, Owl House.
Yes.
There's a lot of great animation things that are out there, animated pieces and whatnot that are getting even better when it comes to like the quality and the message that's coming across. So I really think we really need to take an opportunity to try and see what else is going out there. God knows, no more Infinity Train.
I'm still holding out hope.
Don't be.
Don't you
no,
dare.
No, don't. It's straight to nowhere. You can only see that one.
I guess that means there needs to be an episode. Oh, no.
So, with that said, from all of us here at the Filmosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern Amy.
Class dismissed.